Again, welcome you to Westside Church Internacional. We purposely made half of our name in English and half our name in Spanish to kind of represent that we want to be a multi-ethnic church. We are not just a bicultural church. We want to be a multicultural church, and so we are working on incorporating many different ethnicities into our ranks here, and we want you to know that you are welcome in this place. You are welcome in this place, and we're just so glad to have you here today. Boy, like half the group left, you know? when they said they're going to have a youth service, I think the youth service is bigger than our service today, but that's good, that's good. So I hope Dean was prepared for like 40. Anyway, well, we started a new sermon series last week called Losing Your Religion. Losing Your Religion. Has anybody lost their religion since last week? No, hopefully not. But we're talking about this because it's a super important topic. We talked about this group of people in our culture called the nuns, not the Catholic nuns, not the N-U-N-S, but the N-O-N-E-S, the nuns. And these are people that are describing themselves as having no religion right now, no religious affiliation. They don't consider themselves Christians, Catholics, Buddhists. They just don't have a religion. And so in America right now, there's been some recent surveys done, and they're saying that as many nuns, about 23% of Americans say they're nuns, and it's the same amount as say they're Christians and the same amount that say they're Catholics. So there's about 23% Catholics, 23% Christians, 23% nuns. It's really interesting, and then the rest of it, I guess, is just kind of random different folks. And so it's sad. You know, it's sad that so many people in our society now, the last 10, 20 years, are just giving up their faith. They're just leaving the church. They're deciding that it's not worth it anymore. It's not something that they want to be a part of. And we talked about some of the reasons why people are leaving, and I wanted to put these back up there. And I came up with 8 D words to describe why people are leaving their faith. And so the first one is disagreements, you know, disagreements with the church, disagreements with theology. You know, I didn't like what that pastor said. You know, that sounded awfully strict, or that sounded like something I didn't agree with. So I just left the church over that. Doubts, you know, doubts about God. I mean, and have you ever heard this, that there's doubt is part of faith? Doubt is, I have doubts at times. All of us in here, the most spiritual people in the world, still have doubts. And so just because you have doubts, that's not a reason to walk away from your faith. That's a reason to pursue your faith even more. Desires. People have walked away from the faith because they have evil desires. They have desires to do their own thing. They don't want to do what God wants. They want to do their own life. Dead churches. That's another reason people walk away from the faith. They like, oh, that church, there was nothing going on there. They were dead. They weren't serving the community at all. They just, you know, I got tired of it, and so I just walked away from the church. Divisions. That's something that we have to work on, isn't it? Because churches are known sometimes for all of the division, the conflict that we have with each other. You know, this pastor can't get along with that pastor, and people are like, well, if that's the way the church is, I'm not going to go there. So we have to work on that. We have to work on not having those divisions. Disappointments. Disappointments with the church, disappointments with the pastor, disappointment with God. You know, how many of you have been disappointed with God? Something that has happened in your life, and you're just, you get disappointed with him. And some people walk away from the Lord because of that. 2 more, disconnections and distractions. So being disconnected from other people. You know, it takes a little bit of work to get connected. Maybe you moved to a new town, you don't have a church yet, and maybe some of you are new and you don't know very many people here yet. It's hard to get connected, but it takes a little work. It takes a little intentionality. Well, hopefully at this church, we're going to make it easy for you. We're going to be friendly. We're going to reach out to you, hopefully. But it still takes a little bit of work on everyone's part to stay connected. And then distractions. You know, I was getting my hair cut a couple weeks ago, and the lady I was talking to, I was like, you know, we were talking about her church life, used to go to church every week, and now She hasn't been because she has to work on Sundays and just kind of got out of the habit. And so many people just get out of the habit because they get distracted by other things. So those are some of the reasons. And we started talking about Samson and the life of Samson and how he lost his religion. We're going to pick that up today. But it was interesting. I was listening to NPR, National Public Radio, this week. And all of a sudden they had this story on the Philistines. I'm like, okay, this doesn't happen every day, a story on the Philistines on National Public Radio. And so they were talking about how some people have been researching, some archaeologists have been researching the Philistines, the ancient culture that Samson interacted with. And the Philistines lived right on the coast of Israel, so right by the Mediterranean Sea. And the interesting thing about the Philistines is that they weren't native to that area. They actually came, and the Bible says that they came from like Europe, the area of Europe, and they settled in the Middle East. And that's what we know from the Bible. So these people were doing archaeological research, and they were studying the bones, and they were doing DNA testing on the bones. And they discovered that the DNA of the Philistines had a lot of European strains in it. And so they basically confirm what the Bible said, that, you know, thank you, science, that you once again confirm what the Bible said. You know, we already knew it was true, but it's good when science confirms it. And I just thought, that is so interesting that, you know, first of all, I'm preaching on the Philistines, and that comes on NPR. But that also I'm preaching on losing your religion, because one of the main reasons that people walk away from their faith is because they feel like the Bible is not either relevant or they feel like the Bible is not reliable. And I want to assure you that our Bible that we have today is 100% reliable. And science and archaeology, and even now DNA testing, is proving the Bible again and again and again. In fact, there's a story. David, King David, is, you know, the greatest king of Israel. You know, of course, all Christians, you know, we know about King David, we know about stories. Well, there was no evidence in archaeology that there ever was a King David. And so a lot of people doubted. A lot of people were like, well, that's just a made-up story. You know, King David never really existed and all of that. And of course, Christians are like, yes, of course he did. Well, I think it was like 50 to 75 years ago, they were doing some archaeological digs, and they found an inscription on one of the little statues or something that said, House of David. House of David, and it was the first evidence from archaeology to prove that there really was a king of Israel named David. And so the Bible continually is getting proven again and again by science, by archaeology, and so we can have 100% confidence that our Bible is accurate. In fact, if you look at the just ancient writings, so the Bible is an ancient writing. It was written 2,000 years ago and longer. The most recent part of the Bible was written 2,000 years ago. And there's other ancient writings out there too, like Homer wrote the Iliad. That's one of the other famous ancient writings out there. Well, there's something like 1,800 1,800 manuscripts or part of manuscripts from the Iliad, which is a lot. You know, that's quite a bit. And that's the most manuscripts of any non-biblical writing out there. And no one doubts that the Iliad was an accurate representation of what Homer, the writer, wrote. No one has any concern that we have the right manuscript and that we know what the Iliad was supposed to say, because we have 1,800. Well, the Bible, we have 24,000 ancient manuscripts or pieces of manuscripts. Some are in Greek, some are in Hebrew, some are in Syriac, all kinds of different ancient languages, Latin, some of them are in Latin. And so we have 24,000, and there's like over 5,000 of those that are in Greek, and I can't remember the number that are in Hebrew. But it's this huge amount of of manuscript evidence that the Bible is accurate. And so, you know, when you go into your college classroom, and last week we shared that 25% of college professors are atheists. And so students, when they're going into their college classrooms, there's a 25% chance that you're going to be dealing with somebody who doesn't believe the Bible, probably higher than that. And there, you do not have to be ashamed to be a Christian. You do not have to be ashamed to believe that this ancient text is accurate, it's real, because we have so much. God has made sure that we have that information. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you today. So the title of our sermon was Losing Your Religion is Your Choice. Losing your religion is your choice. And the reason we said that is because Samson was raised in a Christian home. Not a Christian home, but a religious Jewish home. And his parents followed the Lord. His parents loved God and raised him up. And you know, some of you are parents in this room, and you have kids that you've raised to follow the Lord, and they've, you know, maybe walked away from the Lord. And I want to assure you that that doesn't mean that was your fault. You've done what you can, just like Samson's parents did what they could do. And so losing your religion, first of all, is your choice. But today, we are going to look at the next step of this. And it's losing your religion is the easy choice. Losing your religion is the easy choice. You know, a lot of those D words that I put up there, disagreements and doubts and things of that nature, disconnection, those are often the easy way to take, the easy way out. And so many times as humans, we just take the easy way. You know, we sleep in on Sunday morning. What's harder or what's easier, to sleep in or get up and go to church? You know, clearly, sleeping in. Of course, we do have breakfast here, so that makes it a little bit easier. But losing your religion is the easy choice. And we're going to look at Samson. And part of the reason I think he walked away from his faith is because it was the easier way. And so let's turn to Judges 14 and 15. We've got a lot of ground to cover in this story because I only have 3 weeks to make it through the whole story of Samson. And next week we're going to kind of finish it out. So we're going to go through a little bit of this. So for those that weren't here last week, just to kind of recap a little bit of the setting, the story of Samson takes place in the time of the judges. So the judges were rulers or leaders of the people that were right after Joshua. So Joshua came in and conquered the land, and then we have the judges, and then after that we have the kings, King Saul, King David, King Solomon, and so on. And so each judge, there were some famous judges, you remember Gideon and Deborah. They were some of the more famous judges. Well, Samson is one of the famous judges too, and he came near the end of the time of the judges, and he came from a place called Dan. Dan, D-A-N, was one of the tribes of Israel. There's a few Daniels in here. That's where you get your name from, of course. And so it's about this family, Manoah and his wife, and they were older. They weren't able to have children, and an angel appears to Manoah's wife, and later to Manoah, and he says, you are going to have a son, and this son is going to be amazing. He's going to be a Nazirite, and he's going to begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines, because the Philistines were this powerful people that lived basically next door to the Israelites, and they were oppressing them. They had enslaved the Israelites. And so he said, your son is going to be a Nazirite. And as a result of being a Nazirite, that was a special vow that people took in that time. And they said, he's going to be a Nazirite all his life, and so he can't have anything that comes from the grapevine. He can never eat grapes, never eat grape juice or wine. He can never cut his hair, and he can never touch a dead body. So we're going to see how Samson is doing with these different things. So, all right, so let's get into, so Samson is born, and God begins to move in his life, and now we pick it up in chapter 14, verse 1. So, all right. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. So Timnah was one of the small towns of the Philistines. He saw a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." Wow. Like, I mean, talk about a little bit disrespectful here, I'd say. We've got a little disrespectful son on our hands. Anybody know, have one of those ever? Probably not. So I have two wonderful sons who would, but wow, like this is very unusual. Samson is, first of all, chooses a wife from the non-Israelite, which the Israelites were commanded that they weren't supposed to marry other people, the other women or men from the other countries, because God did not want them to start worshiping idols. He wanted them to continue to worship the one true God. And so Samson rebelliously says to his parents, "I want to do this." Verse 4, it says, "His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel." Now, we should not take from that verse that the Lord condoned what Samson was doing. It just means that God was overseeing. And this is a good thing, isn't it? That even when we make bad decisions, even when our children make bad decisions, God is still sovereign over those things, and he can still bring some good out of it. But that doesn't mean what Samson was doing was the right thing. So verse 5, "Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her." So they were going down there, and I guess maybe Samson had gotten a little ahead, or maybe he was a little behind his parents. Well, a lion, you know, a young lion, a strong lion, comes out of nowhere and attacks. And the Spirit of the Lord comes on him, and he just grabs the... You would actually tear a goat, a young goat, by grabbing their hind legs and just kind of ripping it apart. And so maybe that's how he did it, is grab the hind legs. I mean, he was not only strong, but I said last week, like, he was quick. I mean, you have to be quick to, you know, be able to take a lion down. I mean, this is amazing. And so he liked this girl, and he gets betrothed to her, but he doesn't tell his parents about this. Verse 8 says, "Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and so some honey." Now remember his Nazirite vow. What were one of the three things? Never supposed to touch a dead body. He obviously wasn't too concerned about that. So it says he scooped out the honey with his hands and ate as he went along. So there he goes. He broke one of his Nazirite vows right there by touching this dead carcass. He gave some. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Of course he didn't, because he didn't want his parents to know that he was breaking one of his Nazirite vows. So verse 10, "Now his father went down to see the woman, and there Samson held a feast, as was customary for young men. When the people saw him, they chose 30 men to be his companions." So I guess they chose 30 men, maybe the wife's family chose 30 men to be his companions, you know, as was customary. And they started this 7-day wedding feast. And it was a big, big celebration. I'm sure lots of drinking. In fact, they were talking about when they were digging up the Philistine remains and civilization and stuff, they found lots of actual, like, beer and wine pottery, like mugs. So they were a big drinking culture. So my guess is Samson was going right along with everybody else and, you know, drinking along, breaking his second Nazirite vow as well, that he was never supposed to touch or drink wine. So verse 12, Samson's in good spirits. He says, "Let me tell you a riddle." And Samson likes riddles. In fact, we're going to see a couple of them here. So he was a funny guy. You know, he was probably a great-natured guy. I can imagine popular with everybody, popular with all the girls, good sense of humor. He says, "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." Wow, okay. "But if you can't tell me the answer, then you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." So he puts a little wager. "Let's put a little money on this. Let's have some fun," he says. "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." So, of course, we know he's getting his riddle from his experience with the lion and the honey, of course. But he knows that they'll never get that. "For 3 days, they could not give the answer." So remember, there's 7 days of the feast. Verse 15, On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death." Wow, like, okay, didn't you just take this a little to the extreme now? I mean, this is an example of what the Philistine culture was like. It was not a pretty culture. It was not, it was a violent culture. I mean, they were serious about this. "We were going to burn you and your father to death." And they said, "Did you invite us here to steal our property?" It's like, you know, inviting people to a wedding and then you steal from them. Still, burning them is probably a little extreme, but nevertheless. Verse 16, "Then Samson's wife threw herself on him." Of course she did, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother, he replied. "So why should I explain it to you?" Now, husbands, that doesn't go over very well with your wife. Like, you didn't do this for me, husband. "Well, I haven't even done that for my mom or dad." It's like, what's your point? So don't try that, husbands. That one doesn't work very well. Verse 17, "She cried the whole 7 days of the feast." Oh, that's not fun. Maybe Samson should not have given this riddle. "She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people so that she wouldn't get burned to death. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, 'What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?' Samson said to them, 'If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle.'" So he was ticked off at them, you know, because he knew how they got the answer. So verse 19, this is what the Lord was building all this up. The Lord was using this to get Samson to actually do something along the lines of what he wanted Samson to do with his life, which was begin to deliver Israel instead of just leaving the faith and marrying foreign women. Verse 19, "Then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped him of everything, and gave their clothes to those who explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he returned to his father's home, and Samson's wife was given to one of his companions who had attended him at the feast." And so it did not go well. In fact, interestingly enough, Ashkelon was one of the cities where they were doing this dig that I read about. So he went down. This was one of their main cities. So he walks into, you know, like Chicago, one of their main cities, and he kills 30 guys. So he was just this powerful guy that no one could touch. So, all right. So we're going to jump into chapter 15 here. Keep going. Verse 1 says, "Later on, at the time of the wheat harvest," this was basically in the spring around May, "Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, 'I'm going to my wife's room,' but her father would not let him go in." Now, this seems really odd to our culture, like what Samson was trying to do, but actually it wasn't that odd. There were a lot of times that a husband would not actually live with his wife, at least for a time, I guess. And so the wife would often continue to live with her parents, and the husband would live with his parents, and then they would just kind of get together. And usually they would bring a gift. So it wasn't completely crazy what he was actually doing here. But the father said, No, you can't do that. And verse 2, I was so sure that you hated her, he said, that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Okay, this father is really making some serious mistakes here. I mean, first of all, he gives his wife, you know, his daughter away to another guy. And then when he comes back, he's like, well, hey, take her younger sister. She's better looking anyways. I mean, I hope that the first daughter didn't hear that. But anyway, apparently this guy was desperate. So, oh boy. Now, if you thought Samson was upset before, now he's really ticked off. Oh, he's so upset. So in verse 3, he says, Samson said to them, this time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. You almost sense a little bit of remorse in that statement from maybe what he did the first time, because he says, this time I really have a right to get even. It's like, maybe last time I didn't, but this time I really do. Samson was not, God was using him, but Samson was not willingly following the Lord. He was basically just getting revenge. He was kind of just acting out on his own accord here. But God was sovereignly using this. So verse 4, so he went out, and this is incredible. He went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. I mean, how do you do something like that? Now, what I did read is that it's possible that they were actually jackals instead of foxes, because jackals tend to run in packs, whereas foxes are more lone animals. And so it may have referred to jackals because he had to catch 300 of them. But still, I mean, this is incredible. I don't know if he like ran them all into a pen and then he like rounded them up. But can you imagine trying to catch two wild animals and tie their tails together and then somehow get a burning torch in between their tails and then let them go? I mean, can you imagine how many times he got bit from this? I mean, this guy, like I said, he was not only super strong, I mean, his skin must have been like steel, and I guess he was the original Man of Steel. I just thought of that. Anyway, but he was super quick to be able to do this. And so he turns these guys loose, and you can imagine the sight of this, these little, you know, jackals or foxes, you know, running terrified and, you know, with fire burning in their tails, and they're just jumping and, oh my goodness, through all the, and the Philistines are just like, what in the world is going on here? So it says he burned up the shocks and the standing grain together with the vineyards and the olive groves. That's the three major parts of their economy. The vineyards, that's how they made their wine. The olive groves, they had the olive oil, and the grain, the bread. These were the three major parts of their economy. And he just like utterly decimates them. And so they are not happy. So verse 6, when the Philistines asked who did this, they were told Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. So, like I said, they were not kidding before when they said that. So Samson said to them, since you have acted like this, I swear that I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in the rock in the cave of Edom. And so he just went off on them. I mean, he just goes off. I mean, he pulls a Rambo on these guys, and he just goes off and just starts slaughtering them in different cities, villages. And all of a sudden, the Philistines are like, we've got a serious problem on our hands. We have got to go and take care of this. So verse 9, the Philistines went up and camped in Judah. They gathered their army, and they said, we're going to take care of this guy once and for all. We're not going to let him do this to us. They spread out near Lehi. Verse 10, the people of Judah asked, why have you come to fight us? People of Judah are like, what's going on? You know, we've been serving you well. And they said, we have come to take Samson prisoner. They answered, to do to him as he has done to us. Verse 11, then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Edom and said to Samson, don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us? He answered, I merely did to them what they did to me. He was just getting even with them. They said to him, We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines. Samson said, okay, that's fine, but swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves. Agreed, they answered. We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and led him up from the rock. And so, remember I said losing your religion is the easy thing to do? These men of Judah, they were taking the easy way out as well. You know, here they had Samson, their champion. I mean, nobody could stop this guy. And instead of saying, Samson, lead us, we'll fight these guys and we'll free ourselves from them. No, they're ready to turn over their champion, the greatest Israelite warrior that has ever existed. And they were just going to turn him over to the enemy and have him killed rather than become free. And don't we do that sometimes? You know, we're in bondage to sin, and God gives us a way out. And instead of taking that way out, we just turn over that way, you know, we get rid of it, and we take the easy way out, and we continue to live in sin. We continue to leave the Lord. And so that's what they were going to do. And Samson was, he wanted to make sure that they weren't going to kill him because he knew he couldn't fight against his own people. So verse 14 says, as he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward him shouting. I mean, I can only imagine the scene that was going on here. All of a sudden, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, I mean, he was looking around. He just grabbed whatever he could to fight these guys. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it, and he struck down 1,000 men. This is not an exaggeration. He struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said, with the donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. There's his propensity for riddles. With the donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. Another one I read just in English was, with the jawbone of an ass, I have piled them in a mass. I liked that one. When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramoth-Lehi. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, you have given your servant this great victory. So this is the first time we have seen Samson pray. It's the first time that we've I'm sure he probably prayed some other time in his life. But in the Bible story, this is the first time that Samson mentions the Lord. This is the first time that Samson acknowledges the Lord. It's at least good here that he realized, Samson did realize at some level that his strength, his victory, his power came from the Lord. He wasn't following the Lord very well. He was walking away from God all the time, not following his ways. But he did realize. So he was maybe one step better than the men of Judah. You know, the men of Judah, they didn't even put their faith in the Lord. They had no faith whatsoever. And actually, in Hebrews 13, it actually mentions Samson as a man of faith. So we know that he did have some faith. End of verse 18, he says, you have given your servant this great victory, but now must I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? It's like, okay, Samson, if God just give you this victory, I doubt he's going to just let you die of thirst. Verse 19, then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. So a spring came out of the ground. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he revived. So the spring was called En-Hakkor, and is still, and it is still there in Lehi today. Verse 20, Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. And so next week we'll go into the last chapter and we'll finish out that story. But just before we close, just to reflect a little bit on this story, and the worship team can go ahead and come back forward. Losing your religion is always the easy choice. I want to go ahead and put those eight D words up there again, just so you can reflect on them as we close here. It is, as I said at the beginning, it's always easier, you know, to walk away. I think of how many people who have walked away from the church or walked away from a church, for that matter, because of some kind of conflict, some kind of disagreement they had with somebody else. And rather than staying in the church and working it through, rather than humbling yourself and saying, you know what, help me know what I did that hurt you, and I apologize for that. And rather than working through those things, we just walk away. And that's the way we are as humans. We're often taking the easy way out. And that's what Samson kind of seems like he spent his whole life doing, just taking the easy way out. You know, he met a woman and she looked good, and it didn't really matter what her religion was, or, you know, he liked her and he went and he wanted to marry her. Or he wanted to take revenge on the, you know, because they hurt him. Oh, I'm going to take these way out and hurt them. You know, the people of Judah took the easy way out instead of standing up as God told them, you're the people of God. And I'm not, you know, if you trust me, I'm going to help you conquer the people in the land of Canaan. Instead of doing that, they became slaves to the Philistines because the Philistines had better weapons. The Philistines had more power than them, but they didn't trust the Lord. Dear Father, let us not be like that. Let us put our trust in you, God. Lord, let us not take the easy way out. Give us faith, Lord, to believe that you can do anything. Lord, you raised up a superhero. You raised up Samson. And next week, we're going to look at even more amazing things that he was able to do physically. God, help us to remember that you can do all things through those that you've called. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. Pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. As we get ready to worship, there's an image in my head, and I see a door. You know, and Jesus says, I am the door. All you have to do is knock. And I don't know where you are right now, but as you are contemplating where your faith is, there's always an open door with Christ. He says, just knock and I'll answer. His love is pursuing us, and he is just waiting for that knock. In that spirit of seeking and knocking, asking, we want to sing and worship the one God we know that always is excited and happy to answer and to come.